Welcome to the Every Breath Counts podcast. I'm Ryan Shekel, health enthusiast, amateur ultra runner, and award-winning business consultant. And each week I interview experts and leaders about their stories and strategies on how to optimize your mind, your body, your career, and your life so that you can make every breath count. Thank you for investing your time in the show and yourself. Now let's get started. Gary Vee said, "Your legacy is being written by yourself. Make the right decisions." And the popular meme reads, "If you don't come out of this quarantine with a new skill, your side hustle started, or more knowledge, you never lacked time, you lacked discipline." My guest today is a serial entrepreneur and host of the popular podcast Side Hustle Nation, Nick Loper. Nick's biggest pet peeve is seeing people live unhappy lives when they have complete control over their future. Nick and I go deep on how to monetize just about anything. He shares his knowledge of entrepreneurship from over 400 interviews with people who have scaled a side hustle into a full-time business. He even corrects me immediately when I suggest that a side hustle is the monetization of passion and self-interests. Whether you're looking to start a side hustle for some extra holiday jingle in your pocketbook or have a business idea and don't know where to start, this episode is for you. And if this is your first time here, welcome and thank you for tuning in. Be sure to click the subscribe button to stay up to date with all the latest episodes. If you found this episode inspiring, educational, or even just entertaining, I'd be grateful if you gave us a rating review wherever you listen and tag me on Instagram at Every Breath Counts Podcast with any feedback. It's time to enter Side Hustle Nation with Nick Loper. Nick Loper, thank you so much for joining the podcast.
What's going on, man? Thanks for having me.
Dude, anytime. I love what you're all about. You have a website, Side Hustle Nation. You have a podcast. And I love this idea of a side hustle because it incorporates the concept and the idea of monetizing your passion. So how did you start to recognize that you could monetize a passion and you could pursue something maybe more fulfilling in your life?
Well, let's talk about that. I think the passion thing may be somewhat overplayed and maybe a dangerous place to start. And it's because here, I'll say from personal experience, right? Like when I started podcasting, didn't have any passion for it, didn't know what I was doing, had no idea how this whole thing worked. Over the course of 8 years, have become passionate about it. It's become part of my identity and it's become like, you know, it's become my baby. It's like a huge part of my life. But starting out, it was like, okay, what am I curious about? What do people already ask me for advice on? What problems, hurdles, challenges have I overcome in my own life? Because I think, you know, in my case, like I'm interested in a lot of different things, but to name one of them as an undying passion is kind of a stressful question. And we've talked about other people too. It's like, I you know, was super passionate about music. I tried to make it my business and then it turned into a job and then it sucked and it no longer was my passion anymore. Like I killed my passion by trying to monetize it. So yeah. What I would, you know, maybe, you know, and actually, I don't know if you know Nick Huber from the Sweaty Startup. He came on the Side Hustle show and he was like, by no means should you be starting a business around your passion, because when you do, you likely are playing, you know, like people are passionate about fun stuff like yoga and craft beer and, you know, and, you know, we're just talking about baseball and stuff. Like if you're passionate about it, other people likely are too, right? And so that makes it a more competitive sea to swim in. And when people are passionate about it, they do irrational things like work for free and stuff. So he's like, no, you know, start a business around skills and problems and you'll find that passion tends to follow. Same thing, I was painting houses in college. It's like no passion for, you know, getting up on ladders and scraping siding, you know, scraping paint off people's siding. But like over the course of doing it for a couple summers, you can't help but walk past a house and be like, oh, you know, that's a paint job waiting to happen over there. I got to stop by, give these guys an estimate. It's something that comes from doing the work. Am I making sense this so far?
So that makes a lot of sense. So what were you doing before you started your side hustle?
So I did what you were supposed to do, got a corporate job out of college. But you know, kind of in that last year prior to graduation, had started dabbling with some online business stuff. And in my case, it was in the world of affiliate marketing, trying to help people find their next pair of shoes. Like, this was the niche that I was in, thanks to an internship that I had in college. And the business that I was running, the nights and weekends side hustle, original side hustle, was this footwear comparison shopping site. It's called shoesniper.com, and it's like most recent iteration. And the whole thing was like, we're going to help you find the best price on your next pair of shoes. And we're going to, you know, integrate the coupons, and, you know, we're going to, you know, really help people out in this sense. But, you know, was I passionate about sneakers? Not really. It was, you know, probably my own worst customer over the course of 9-10 years of running the site. Like, I don't know, maybe about 3 pairs when they got worn out. And it wasn't a passion, but it was really interesting to run the business, to optimize, you know, the ad spend, to try and tweak the landing pages, to try and, you know, come up with better comparison algorithms, to strike new deals with advertisers. Like, all of that was super fun. And so that was the original side hustle 3 years before I, you know, kind of felt comfortable quitting my day job based on the track record of revenue that it was spinning off.
So that's a great lesson for people. And honestly, this is different than what I anticipated you telling me at this point. Here I'm thinking, you know, okay, someone has this corporate job. They have the gig that pays them, and maybe they're not passionate about it and they want to take a step back and follow something, you know, and lead with their heart. Right. And you kind of hear that a lot, like, follow your passion. If you do something you love, you never work a day in your life, whatever it is. Right. But you're telling me that a side hustle, you might have to think about differently. So let's reframe our thinking about a side hustle. And I want to really take this track, because I think a lot of people have a job, but I think they want to find ways to supplement their income, supplement their spare time. They want to maybe optimize their productivity in their spare time to do something meaningful that can have lasting impact on their life, maybe really affect their personal finance. So how do we reframe this idea of a side hustle? Let's go case study, right? So Johnny down the road has a 9-to-5 and he wants to supplement his income to maybe buy some extra things in his life. Where should he start looking into opportunities of creating his first side hustle?
Yeah. So what is funny about this, and we've all probably been there at various points in our life, you know, you end up Googling like ways to make money online, ways to make extra money, side hustle ideas. Like, I've totally been there, right? What is interesting, from now more than 400 side hustle show interviews, you know, very few of those, if any, have said, well, because I always ask, like, hey, you know, how'd you come up with that idea? What inspired you to get started? Almost nobody says, well, I Googled side hustle ideas and I scrolled down to number 72 on the list or whatever. What happens more often is this, either, you know, looking internally, right? You've probably seen like the diagram, like the ikigai diagram of, you know, your reason for being, this Japanese word, but it's like, you know, what's the intersection of your skills, your interests, your passion, like what people will pay you for. And like the middle is the sweet spot, right? But for a lot of people, and kind of myself included at various points, was like, well, maybe my Venn diagram, like, there's no overlap. Like, my skills and interests are over here. What people would pay me for is over here. And what I like doing is over, like, there's a whole bunch of disconnect over there. And so what you have to start looking for instead is pains and problems, because on the other side of those, that's where business opportunities often lie. And you think about, in your own life, what do you spend money on? I spend money to make pains and problems go away. I normally like to be a little more optimistic, but for this exercise, you gotta put on your pessimist hat for a day or a week or two. And I just use this, just open like a notes app on your phone. I call this my what sucks list. And this is everything that bothers you, everything that annoys you, everything that you find yourself complaining to your partner, your spouse about, your kids about, everything your kids complain to you about, everything that your coworkers are complaining to you about, just whatever gripe it is. On the other side of those pains and problems, there may be a business idea. And not all of them, right? But, you know, on some of those. And those are kind of worth exploring. Like, could you provide the answer to that problem? So I think that's kind of the first place that I would look. And then hopefully you have a decent list of ideas there, and kind of talk about what might make sense to narrow down those options, if that's where you want to go.
That's great, because in a way, it makes so much sense. And I'm very passionate about sales. And one of the principles in selling is you're solving a problem, right? Like you're not trying to necessarily, or at least when done correctly, you're not trying to like sling product. It's not the used car salesman selling the car that's on the lot because it's on the lot, right? Like you are identifying a problem and you're providing a solution. So there's value. You're providing value. And I love the idea of creating your business, creating your side hustle within the same framework, because if you're just pursuing a passion, whether it be baseball, whether it be hunting, whether it be skiing, whatever it may be, podcasting, if you're looking inward to fulfill something within you, you're not really providing a service for anyone else that may be monetizable as a side hustle. But if you're looking outward and you're problem solving for someone, then you're truly offering a resource that someone is likely willing to pay for because it maybe eases their pain a little bit. What say you?
Yeah, totally. Because I'm trying to think, like back in 2009, I started a personal blog. I was going to be a blogger. Like this is going to be so fun. And it totally was, like, you know, as a creative outlet, as an excuse to learn WordPress and this habit of, you know, writing and creating content for the internet, it was absolutely worth it. But like the egotistical thought that like just people would be interested in my own writing, like about random, you know, here's Nick's thoughts on current events, or here's, you know, here's pictures from our vacation. Like who, there was no consistent method or reason, like what's in it for me? Like there was no what's in it for me for the reader, right? And so when I started to narrow down the focus of the site to talk about marketing, online business, side hustles, how to make extra money, how to save money, how to be more productive, like, okay, that's when things started to take off. It's like, oh, you know, this whole like, you know, stop trying to be everything to everyone, like start serving a specific audience, a specific niche. Like that's when things started to go pretty well. And we can go back like to solve this problem. I came across a site just this week and it was like tailgating challenge or something, tailgatingchallenge.com, where the guy was like, I love tailgating. I mean, who doesn't, right? You're going to go see your favorite team. You're having a good time. What he did to monetize this interest or passion of his was to start reviewing tailgating products, the grills, the pop-up tents, the, you know, parking lot games, like all this stuff. And, you know, he's making a few thousand dollars a month having done this. And it was just like, okay, here's this interest of mine, but asking the question like, okay, not making it about me, but making it about other people like me, like creating content for that audience. And yeah, that's where his magic was on the affiliate marketing side of things.
That's great. So how do we take a problem and create a business? And I think this is where a lot of people get stuck, because if you take a look at businesses that likely are failing, that likely aren't taking off at maybe the speed or trajectory that an entrepreneur hopes.
It's never likely, as fast.
Yeah. So likely it's like, okay, well, I know this is a problem, but how do I monetize it? How do I turn it into a business? How do I create the actual solution?
Sure. So three things come to mind. And maybe even before those three is kind of like, okay, can we fall in love with the problem and not necessarily the solution that you may have in your head? So maybe it starts with prospective customer conversations. If you could wave a magic wand, how would you make this go away? How much is this problem costing you? Like how big of a pain is this really? Like, would this be a solution worth paying for? Right. So kind of like doing some pre-market research validation. If you can't find existing businesses that are already out there operating in your niche. Like some people might look at that and say, oh, there's too much competition. That's bad news. But somebody else has already done the legwork of proving out the market, proving out the concept. So it's like, okay, that's generally a good sign of if, you know, if there's multiple dry cleaners in your town, if there's multiple sushi restaurants in your town, like, you know, if they've been around for 12 months, 18 months, like, or longer, you know, that's probably a profitable business. You know, they're probably going to be doing okay. So not necessarily coming up with the world's most, you know, innovative, never before seen business idea. Like get that thought out of your mind. Like, right. Think, you know, probably more evolutionary than revolutionary. Like, okay, how can I make a small tweak, pivot, you know, put my own unique spin on what is already out there. And that's like a safer place to play from a risk validation standpoint. But three ways to go about solving the problem. The big three that almost any business on the planet, you know, tends to fall under one of these is I can solve that problem with a service. I can solve that problem with a product, or I can solve that problem with information, with content, with, you know, my knowledge and expertise, or even, you know, pointing the mic and interviewing somebody else about this topic, right? Yeah. If we give the example of like a dirty house, this is a problem with some different solutions, right? The service solution is, well, I just hire a cleaning service to come and clean my house. Problem solved. I can go buy a product to solve this problem, a new Swiffer mop or a new vacuum cleaner or, yeah, you know, some new miracle eco-friendly cleaning spray. Like, there's products to go out and solve this problem too. And then on the information side, on the content side, I can read the life-changing magic of tidying up. I can watch like these decluttering organizing shows on Netflix, on YouTube. Like, there's people tackling it from all different angles. But if you are the person who's falling in love with the problem and communicating with your prospective customers on how they best, you know, kind of let them kind of steer the ship on which way to go versus, you know, just sticking your flag, well, this is the way I want to do it. And it's like, well, you know, did you test that at all? Did you validate that at all?
What a great perspective to have on this, because I know, you know, one of the things that I teach young salesmen about is the art of listening. And, you know, when you're interviewing a prospective customer, one of the things that I try to instill in all of, you know, the young sales managers, reps, whatever they may be that I speak to, is 80% of the time you're listening. And that what that listening does is it allows you to hear the problems and offer feedback to the solutions that you may have already thought of in your mind, right? So, well, you're exactly what you're saying is I have this idea that this customer may want. If you're asking open-ended questions to potential customers, then you're going to get the feedback that is either proof of concept in what you're selling, or it allows you to go back to the drawing board and say, okay, maybe we need to tweak, whether it's a service, how we provide the service. If it's a product, maybe we need to tweak some of the characteristics of this product, the benefits of this product. So I love this idea of listening. And the other thing that you talked about too was competition. I think so many people get scared by competition. They say, well, it's already been done before. I can't do this. You know,
yeah,
but exactly what you say. Proof of concept is so important. So I think we also need to reframe the way we look at competition and think of it not as something that's scary and going to put us out of business. It's opportunity. It's proof of concept. There is a market for that.
Yes. Yeah. So, I've totally been the person like coming up with these great like blog post ideas, and then, you know, you Google it to see, you know, what else is out there. Sure enough, I don't know if you've ever Googled something and gotten zero results. Sure enough, somebody has already written about it, and you're like, well, I guess I'll come up with another idea. Instead, yeah, of saying like, oh, you know, how do I put my own unique spin on it? How do I, you know, bring in my own expertise, you know, and what angle are they presenting versus what I want to present? But totally, there's this book called Start From Zero by Dane Maxwell, which is highly recommended reading for anybody kind of like in this startup phase, this idea selection or idea, you know, searching phase. And he's got this framework. I think it's CPSO for customer pain solution offer. Mm. Like, okay, who am I going to target? What pain do they have? What's my proposed solution? And then what's my offer? Like, what is the thing that I'm going to sell them? Is it, you know, I'll stop by every week and clean the house for $100 a week, you know, whatever. That's the offer part of it. But you're 100% right. Don't look at competition as just, well, it's just hopeless for me. And bonus points, if you can go for and you can cross-reference this with like Google Trends or something, like, is there a rising tide of interest? Because if there is, then as a new participant in this market, it's not necessarily about you conquesting market share from some existing service provider. It's like, the pie just keeps getting bigger. Like, we talked to a couple brothers who had a mobile car detailing business. And one of the sound bites that they left me with that stood out was, you know, for most of our customers, it's the first time getting their car detailed. And I was like, oh, to me, that signals a growing market. Like if you know, those are first-time customers, it wasn't like, oh, I used so-and-so service down the street and I decided to give you a shot. It's like, no, I just got sick of dealing with a dirty car. I wanted somebody to come fix this for me. And so I think if you can find one of those, you know, rising tide of specialties, it becomes easier to go out and market yourself.
I love that. I love the idea of the rising tide, because you're so right on this. And there's so many rising tides. Like, there are so many industries that are growing at an exponential pace. And if you're adapting with the times, you're likely going to be in an industry that grows. And the great thing about being in the growth industry is all the, you and your competition, as you sell, you are not just selling the product, the service, the content with that you're selling, but as you and your competitors are providing all those services, you're selling the industry. And just like you talked about with the mobile detailing, if somebody has not detailed their car, it's so important that someone in your industry is out there selling the concept of car detailing. So how do you find rising tides so that you can kind of like take the wave that the industry is going? Is there like a strategy that you have seen that works for finding tides that are growing right now?
Yeah. So Google Trends is one way to do it. You can kind of see like it'll show you the, you know, relative interest in this search term, you know, over a period of time. You can pay attention to just, you know, what your friends and neighbors are talking about. You know, if you consider yourself an early adopter, of course, in hindsight, like 8 years ago, you know, it was early days of podcasting when I started the Side Hustle show, but there were already dozens of entrepreneur interview shows out there. It felt late, even in 2013, it felt late to the game. And, you know, I imagine 2022, 2023, like it's only going to feel later, but I still think it's early days, at least in terms of, you know, podcast listenership as a portion of, you know, total audio hours consumed as a term in terms of like radio ad dollars spent. Like there's still a lot of, there's still a lot left to conquest in that space. Looking for, you know, one of my favorite things is like looking at, you know, the signs on trucks driving around town, and we see like, oh, you know, here's the gutter cleaning service, or here's the pet waste removal service, or here's the, you know, window washing guy, or here's the pressure washing. And you're like, oh, okay. You know, so more and more people must be hiring out for this stuff. If you got teenagers, they'll tell you what's trending. Lots of different ways to kind of pay attention to what's going on. I was searching the other day for like Christmas light installations. I'm looking up at the peak of this 30-foot. I was like, I don't think my ladder is going to reach up there. Is there somebody else who can come do this for me? Kind of a seasonal thing, but seeing what else might be out there.
I love that. So now we have not a passion, we have a need, right? We've identified a need. We have done some work on identifying trends. We have listened to potential customers. For those of us who maybe are working a corporate job that don't have any experience in entrepreneurship, how do we start to build out a company, right? Because a side hustle, in a way, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, when done wrong, is more like a hobby. So how do we kind of reframe our thinking to say, this isn't a hobby, this isn't an activity, this is a company? Like, what are the pillars of creating a company that can act as a side hustle?
That's a good question. I think the IRS will let you write off your hobby as a business for 5 years before they say, I'm sorry, sir, this is just a hobby. Like at a certain point, you're going to need to turn a profit, or we're going to stop letting you deduct these losses. I want to go back to the, spotting trends thing real quick too. And there's, you know, the Wayne Gretzky line about, you know, good players, you know, skate where the puck is. Great players skate where the puck is going. Yeah. And we've had some people on the podcast who talk about creating content, you know, on a, you know, blog basis or even a YouTube basis, even though the search tools show zero search volume. They're like, There's no demand for this, and nobody's searching for this. But because they have been paying attention as a member of this community, they know that people are looking for this, or they know that this is an up and coming brand that people are going to start searching for. So they can create, they can be a first mover, an early mover for that type of thing. And I think that comes from being, you know, having your pulse on the, having your finger on the pulse of the industry. As I've followed the outsourcing or virtual assistant industry for a long time for another side project of mine. And so we would just, you know, stuff would pop up in my feed. You know, I would notice things in different articles or different links, or, you know, people would tag me on Twitter for this stuff. And it's like, oh, that's an interesting up and coming, or like this company just raised venture capital. Like, you know, if you're kind of reviewing, you know, direct to consumer brands and stuff like that, you get, there's different methods depending on what niche or industry you're in, but trying to be taking notice of, you know, where that puck is going. But building out a company, so this is a really important thing to try and think after, as you're narrowing down your different ideas, options, is trying to project out, you know, 3 to 5 years of what if this works? What if this thing actually works? And what does success look like here? Because I think we get really caught up on the failure side. Well, what if this doesn't work? What if I look stupid? What if I lose my money? What if I'm just an abject failure and that sucks and that's painful? But like, you know, realistic worst case scenario, like, okay, you know, minimize your downside and hopefully you can still put food on the table and be realistic about that downside and take a swing. But on the upside, okay, what if this works? And I think the best way to do that is to find somebody who has walked that path, who's 3 to 5 years ahead of you, who has had some reasonable level of success, and trying to figure out what does their day-to-day look like? Are they still working 60, 80 hour weeks, or do they have a little more time leverage in their days? Like, is there, and would that be a win for you, right? Like if here's somebody who's done it and done it well, the thing you're considering, would that be a win, you know, to get to where they are, they're at? And then kind of reverse engineer as you go about structuring your days. Like, of course, you know, do things that don't scale at the beginning, right? Like there's a sweat equity portion of getting anything off the ground that I think is valuable and almost inevitable. But like, if you don't see how it's going to ultimately remove your hours from the equation, at least in a direct, you know, input to output type of thing, then I might question that depending on your side hustle goals. Of course, like if you're happy with that, you know, just, you know, want to put in the time, get paid, great. It's trying to think like in terms of like, I walk dogs versus I own a dog walking company, or like I am a bricklayer versus I have a bricklaying company. Like just a subtle shift in like, okay, how could I potentially scale this thing beyond just myself?
Yes. The one thing that you said that I absolutely love, and I think about a lot of things in this way, is reverse engineering. Because I think if you have the end goal in mind, and it doesn't have to be the end goal, like in 30 years, I'm going to have a, you know, Facebook, right? Like maybe you're making content, or maybe you're starting a software company. You're like, okay, 30 years, I'm going to have a Facebook. Well, let's scale that back a little bit. But what does it look like as a successful company? Because if you understand all the aspects of what it would take as a successful company, well, then you can start there, work back, and start taking the steps to achieve each of those different parts. Like maybe take a step back and say, okay, well, I understand that I'm going to have some scheduling. I might need an assistant for that. So I'll do it now, but let me put some policies in place, or let me put some procedures in place that allow scheduling to become easy, because that's going to be a part of this business. Accounting. I may have to have someone that understands finance and tax code. So I'm going to have to look for resources over there. Sales. I'm not going to be able to scale a company if I'm doing all the sales for myself. So maybe I need to look at ways to branch out, reach out, market, touch as many different people as possible. Because at some point, if I want to scale, that's all going to be something that I'm going to have to start to give up some control of. So I love this idea. I love this idea of reverse engineering. What would you say are like the three biggest mistakes people make when they're starting their side hustle?
Oh my gosh, I don't know if I have three, but one that definitely comes to mind touches on something that you just said. And it's this one step at a time type of thing, where like I'm kind of a planner type of person, and my wife is the same way. It's like, I kind of want to know like how to get there. I kind of want to know that roadmap. But what we've seen from, you know, the 400 plus side hustle show interviews is that what separates those people who, you know, have made it on the show versus the people who are kind of like stuck on the side hustle sidelines is this willingness to get started, like this willingness to take the first step, yeah. not knowing, you know, steps 2 through 10, or saying, I'll be able to figure it out as I go. I think that's your number one job as an entrepreneur. Because like, no matter where, what level you're at, the next step is probably something that you haven't done before. And so it's another challenge, another hurdle that you kind of have to figure it out. That's your job. That's like, as the boss, everybody's kind of looking to you to get that thing done. And so that's kind of one thing that I've found definitely separates people who, you know, struggle to get started versus, you know, people who have this willingness to take a swing, willingness to take that first step.
So I struggle with this, and I struggle on the opposite side. I tend to jump right into things without giving it too much thought. And in a way, it's benefited me because I get a lot of stuff started, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not necessarily to the level that it could be. And my wife, on the other hand, is super strategic. And I think I struggle sometimes with the idea of like kind of holding myself back on certain actions because I haven't done the research that probably is necessary to perform an action strategically. So what is the balance that entrepreneurs generally, like successful entrepreneurs, have in terms of like acting quickly and just taking action versus formulating like a strategy around their business? Like, where is that balance? Is there a sweet spot?
That's a good question, because I'm kind of the person probably more like you who is like, this is cool. Let's do it. Like, let's get this out into the world and see what happens later. And that has worked well in the examples of like the virtual assistant site, where it's like, this is a resource that I want to exist in the world. Like, I was struggling to hire my first remote team member. I didn't know what companies were legit. Like, how does it all work? Like, do you have to pay taxes? Like, is this a, I mean, all of the kind of common questions, like, you know, are they going to steal my idea? Like all sorts of like, you know, mind games and stuff. And so trying to put together the, you know, Yelp for outsourcing companies, like this is something that ought to exist into the world. And then, you know, the larger scale monetization of like how that site would make money with preferred partners and affiliate relationships, lead generation relationships, display advertising, consulting calls, like, you know, all that kind of came down the road. And it was the same thing with Side Hustle Nation. This is something that I'm excited about, interested in producing. And I'm going to trust that if I, you know, put value out into the world, there will be opportunities to monetize down the road. Now, I have become better at that through paying attention to what is working for other people in similar spaces, right? That is something that took longer than I maybe care to admit to start paying attention to. Like, oh, other people are making money through affiliate offers, through their own digital products, through, you know, paid group coaching and stuff like that. And it's like, I coming at it from a blogger mindset, like, I'll just write for the internet and people will find me. And it's like, no, you got to pair that with a little bit of intentionality and trying to, again, reverse engineer what's working for other people and see if that same thing, with your own unique twists can work for you too. So I'm totally with you. But yeah, if you compare those two things, the, you know, willingness to take action quickly with the like, okay, just pause for a second and say like, okay, big picture, what's the business plan here?
So that makes a lot of sense. And the one thing that you really brought up there as well is marketing. And marketing, in a lot of ways, when people are thinking about a side hustle, I feel like is, you know, in their minds is like, this is down the road, because I might not have something right now that like, it might have value, but I don't have income to support marketing. So like, if you're looking at a side hustle, it's kind of the chicken and the egg, right? Like, I can put out a service, I could put out a product, I could put out content. But if it's not making money, how do I rationalize spending money in marketing and sales? Or should I flip the script on that and say, no one's going to find my stuff if I don't invest money in marketing and sales?
Right. If you don't tell anybody about it, nobody's going to know that you exist. Yeah. This is like the awareness problem that, you know, is the reason a lot of businesses die. You know, it could be a great service, but if people don't know you exist, if people can't find you, then, you know, it's kind of, you know, you hear the crickets chirping and the phone never rings and the emails never come in. So obviously marketing is going to depend on, you know, what business that you're in and, you know, how marketing is done in that space, right? As a general rule, you know, marketing 101 is to go where your audience already is. Mm-hmm. And it's like, go where the cash is already flowing in a way. And so you can do that through strategic partnerships. Like we had a guy on the podcast who was running a digital agency focused on, you know, email marketing for e-commerce brands, right? And so what he would do was go out and reach out to software companies, other, you know, influencers, creators in the e-commerce space and say, hey, I would love to come on and teach this free workshop to your audience on how to get better open rates for your emails or something like that, right? And so it's like a totally free value add. Like he showcases his expertise. There's not even a real like pitch to come like buy my service. It's just like, look, I'm establishing myself as the expert. So when the need arises, oh, by the way, and you can drop in hints like, oh, we do this for clients, or here's a case study of, you know, a client that we work for. So that's one way to do it. It's like this strategic partnership. How do you get in front of the people who, you know, your audience is already doing business with in some way? Who are they already paying attention to? You can do this through what I'll call like the buy buttons strategy or the mini search engines strategy. It's like, well, how can you shrink the internet in some way? I remember when I started college at the University of Washington, I was like, man, 30,000 undergrads, like coming from a graduating class of 270, like this is pretty intimidating. And, you know, the orientation leader was like, yeah, it seems like a lot, but you'll find ways to shrink the university, right? Through interest groups, through clubs, through fraternities, through, you know, different organizations on campus. It's like, okay, you know, that makes sense. But you can do the same thing online through, you know, what I'll call these mini search engines, like Udemy for online courses, like Apple Podcasts for podcasts, like Amazon for physical products, like eBay, Etsy. You know, where is the cash already flowing? Like Fiverr, Upwork for freelance services. And so I think there's different ways to tap into marketplaces like that. And even on the content creation side, I think YouTube is probably a really overlooked search engine in terms of answering your audience's questions. We had a guy on the podcast, Paul Miners, who would create these videos like how to do blank in Asana, like establishing himself as the expert in all things Asana. And he's like, hey, I'm Paul. I'm an Asana consultant. And here's how to do blank in Asana based on, you know, what people were asking him and based on like his own questions, coworkers, you know, were asking him how to use this tool. And, you know, he's getting, you know, people would watch his videos, you know, through YouTube search and, you know, a percentage of those would send him a form, you know, send him an email. I'd be like, could you come in and train our team on this? Like, that would be really cool. And you can do that remotely. And by the way, we need 15 people at this training. So, you know, name your price. And it's like, oh, okay. So there's lots of different ways to get in front of your people.
Yeah. I think branding yourself as an expert is so important. And it's funny you bring up YouTube because I've thought about this a million times. And the only reason that I haven't thrown up more like YouTube videos that are just completely random is because I've tried to be strategic about it. But I've always thought like if I Google something or YouTube it, and it goes to the same concept that you have of like this proof concept and competition, I can go to YouTube and I could say, how do I replace a faucet? Whatever it may be, right? And there's like 10 videos. This is how you replace a faucet. Oftentimes, there's only maybe like one good video, but there's a bunch of them. And I thought in my head, I'm like, man, I could just make a new video. It could be the same video, but it could be done better. Maybe a little bit more succinct. Maybe the audio is better. Maybe the video is better. Maybe I can put some extra little details in there. And it would create value and people would appreciate it. But it would start to brand you as that expert. And I think that's a great strategy in terms of branding. And I think it's so important to piggyback off another thing you said of like building relationships in industries. And you should always be kind of within the niche that you're servicing. So how do you go about like finding the right, maybe people, building the right network, connecting at a level with your industry that may potentially bring clients in the long run, but also just kind of like plug you in to that smaller world you're trying to get into?
Yeah, you know, going back to the YouTube thing, like if you just want, you know, a pure, like for fun side hustle, like if this, if it takes off, great. If it doesn't, like, I love the angle of tutorial YouTube, like how, you know, you had a problem, you solved it, you figured it out. Maybe even you used YouTube to solve it, but then you figured out a slightly faster way to do it. Like I had how to create a folder in Gmail, which I think still ranks pretty well. Like just every month, you know, it racks up ad dollars on YouTube. How to like download a high resolution picture from Instagram was one of mine that, you know, had 10,000 views before it, you know, they changed the interface and my little hack didn't work anymore. But like, you know, those types of content, like it feels like the most passive income in the world. Cause it's just like screen share video, you know, 10 minutes, yes. Boom, it's out there into the world. Like it's, I don't know. I love that stuff.
I would imagine how to is probably the most common two words used on YouTube, right?
Like I believe it. We had a guy, we were replacing our faucet. It's funny you say, well, how to replace a sink, right? And one of the things like on the dishwasher connection was like how to hook it into the garbage disposal. And sure enough, like this plumber out of Salt Lake, I want to say, had this video like, oh, here's how you knock out the little stopper that's in the disposal. And, you know, he had thousands and thousands of views on this video. It's like, I hope he made, you know, a few cents worth of ad dollars for me watching that video. And it's like, you know, create something once, make money from it over and over again. Like that's a beautiful type of business. But back to the thing on networking, what has been helpful for me has always been showing up at in-person events, like embedding yourself in that community. And if you can, you know, have a couple, buddies, like a couple people who are kind of like on the inside before you go. So you at least aren't just a total like wide-eyed stranger when you walk up, at least as an introvert, like that's been helpful for me. Having a blog or podcast, like where you can interview somebody else and you have an excuse to connect with people in your industry in that way has been really huge. Because it's like, you know, some of these guests, you know, they charge $1,000 an hour for their time for consulting. But all of a sudden, if you're like, hey, can I talk to you for my podcast? They're like, sure. And it's a totally random, I don't know how long this gate stays open, but it's open right now. And it's, I think it's one worth taking. If you're coming in to it with this, you know, serve first, embedding yourself in the community and, you know, just kind of being a consistent voice of positivity and not trying to come in and scam people, I think you'll stand out.
That makes so much sense. What's the most successful like side hustle that you've either had on your podcast or that you've worked directly with, helped out? I mean, who's kind of been like the most successful? What kind of story is that like?
Oh my God. I mean, we've had lots of millionaires on the show. I'm trying to think of some interesting ones. Like it's the episodes that perform best for me are not like the famous entrepreneurs. Like we've had, you know, John Lee Dumas on, you know, a handful of times with his, you know, multi-$100,000 monthly income reports. But, you know, the stories that stand out are the people who like, oh, I started this print on demand, or I started this based on an older episode of yours. And here are the results that I'm seeing. Like if it can check the box of relatable, repeatable, low barrier to entry, no special skills required, like those tend to do well. Like we had a woman who was doing pet waste removal in Michigan. And she was like, I was, you know, inspiration struck. I was out in the backyard picking up after my own dog. Like, this is kind of a pain point for me, but if it's a pain for me, it's probably a pain for other people. Sure enough, goes on Google. Oh, there are other companies around here that offer this. Okay, boom, validation done. And then she went to town with like, you know, bright pink branding for Crouppen's Poopin' Scoopin'. Erica Crouppen is her name. And when we spoke, she had like 80 or 100 recurring weekly customers. Like once somebody gets used to paying for this thing, they're like, oh, I don't have to deal with that anymore. I got a person for that. And I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. Just thinking about all of these different ones.
One of my favorite ones, though, right? Because there's competition there. So what would you say like separates her? So there's proof of concept, right? There's an idea. There's other people that are doing this pet waste removal. So, I mean, what is it, pink? Like, what is it that separated her? What did she do differently that allowed her side hustle to kind of take off?
So she grew the pie, right? She wasn't going out to conquest from this other company, but she was able to grow the size of the market through some creative marketing, particularly on Facebook, but also through like, oh, you know, we got a dog park in town. Would it be cool if I hung up a bright pink banner on the side of the wall over there? Sure. What's it going to cost? You know, $200. Like, Okay, done deal. Going into the vet's office, right? Going where, who are your target customers already doing business with? Going into the vet's office, bringing donuts. Hey, can I drop off some business cards here? Through Facebook, like buy sell groups, you know, an attention getting picture. I think it was a picture of a dog taking a dump was her attention getting picture. And she was like, you know, pet waste removal starting at $15. Message me for details. And it was like, you know, boom, boom, boom. You know, her phone is like blowing up from these types of posts. So I think that's one way to go about that.
That's such a great strategy. You look, it goes to show that like getting yourself out there too, is so important. And, you know, we talked about marketing already and whether you should spend money on marketing. Well, the best investment you can make, in my opinion, on marketing, on sales, is your time investment. And it takes you getting out of your comfort zone, introducing yourself to people that are potential customers, or introducing yourself to people who are going to introduce you to potential customers, and creating that network, building that sales funnel so that you ultimately have someone come back that you can service, that you could provide a service for. But again, it's that time investment of yourself, of helping people understand you and your product and your service or whatever it may be, so that they know where to find you ultimately. Yeah.
I'm just scrolling through my list of archives, like trying to look at other creative ones. I mean, there's tons in here. A friend of ours from California was selling like custom cookies, like $50 a dozen. And I was like, okay, well, what separates these cookies for $50 a dozen from, you know, a pack of Oreos for, you know, $2.50 or something? And, you know, it was like excellent artwork, which he, you know, learned through practicing the skill over and over again, like becoming good at that. And then just kind of dominating the Instagram marketing. And she's like, you know, I would sell out in minutes after posting this flash sale type of thing, like by, you know, becoming part of that audience. And, you know, it travels through word of mouth when you're doing these, you know, cookies for birthday parties and mom groups and stuff. It's like, oh, where'd you get those? Oh, you got to talk to Jen. She's the best, you know? And so I've found that the word of mouth really spirals faster than I might expect, right? Like for my wife and her business partner, they do wedding photography, and they did, you know, started out by pricing really low, ad on Craigslist, like just trying to build up a portfolio, because these brides admittedly are taking a risk. Like, you never shot a wedding before. Like, do I really want you coming to mine? Like, oh, well, okay, the price is right. So that's how they built up their initial portfolio. But then what was really interesting for me to watch standing by was, you know, at these weddings, there's half a dozen bridesmaids who are all getting married in the next 3 to 5 years, who all know, you know, half a dozen other people, you know. So like the word of mouth really started to spiral after those first couple of years. And they do very little proactive marketing these days outside of some, you know, vendor relationships at certain venues. Again, going, trying to get in front of customers where they're already doing business. And in this case, the venues.
Yeah, that's a really great concept. And I'm curious to get your opinion on this too, because you never want to devalue like the product or service that you're selling, but to a certain extent, there's definitely value in exposure. So, I mean, is it worth even having a conversation of like, should you price your product, service, content low enough just so you could get exposure? Or does that devalue the service to an extent where it's maybe not worth it? Like, you may lose money on it, but are you setting a poor precedent by maybe devaluing yourself early in the side hustle game?
Yeah, there's always the two sides of the coin, or the two sides of the debate on that. If it's a customer that you are only going to realistically interact with once and you need to build a portfolio, fine. Discount it, do it for free, like prove your worth, get the social proof, get the word of mouth, get the recommendation, get the positive review on Google or Yelp, and then go about your business, you know, continually stair step up. If it's somebody who, because I've had freelancers that I've worked with who are, you know, just starting out, and you come back to them a couple months later and they're like, hey, things are booking up, you know, now my rate is X and it's, you know, two or three times what I was paying. It's like, you know, that's a little bit harder for me as a customer to swallow. And so it's like, yeah, if it's somebody you're going to do business with long-term, you almost have to start higher. But I get, you know, there's, you know, especially if it's a portfolio driven business where you kind of need just to get in your reps. That's probably where it makes the most sense to start low.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I love, I love the concept of the side hustle. I love what you're doing to help people not follow their passion, but help supplement, you know, their income and really take control of their life.
Yes.
You know, when you're working for a corporation or industrialists, whatever you want to call it, at a certain extent, you're subject to the larger corporation. And I think one of the things that is so appealing about entrepreneurship is the autonomy and the freedom that comes with it. And I do believe at the core of everything that we've talked about so far, you know, you can apply a lot of these principles to any job, any career, any side hustle. I mean, these are all very translatable concepts in general business, general finance. And I think if you are self-aware enough to kind of take some of these strategies, it'll really help you to grow no matter what kind of path you're looking to take. What haven't we talked about? What excites you the most about side hustles that we haven't talked about yet?
I love this call to like exercise control in some area of your life where you can exercise control. I think, you know, we're all on this mission to, I want to be in charge of my own calendar. You know, I want to, you know, be in charge of how I spend my days. And there's a spectrum. I don't even know if, you know, a Bill Gates or an Elon or a Jeff Bezos is really in charge of like, you know, their full 24 hours. Like there's always going to be some other people's demands on your time, like just to be realistic. But there's a sliding scale. And so even if you're working 9 to 5, it's like, okay, could you carve out a half an hour for yourself at the beginning or end of your day where you have the most control over your time? Like, and you're not reacting to other people or putting out fires. Like, could you start, you know, exercising that freedom in the name of grabbing back more of that time? So that's something that is exciting to me. There's this like Warren Buffett line that goes something like, if you don't figure out a way to make money in your sleep, you're going to work until you die. And I don't know that the dream of, you know, truly passive income is necessarily a realistic thing to shoot for, especially starting out. But I think if you look at your income as a pie chart today, you know, take an honest look at it, you know, what percentage of that pie chart is active income versus passive income? And I think it's 100% natural for us to all start out where that is 100% active income. Yeah, I got a job. That's how I make money. It's active income. I trade time for dollars. But if you don't carve out some of your time to like build a little sliver starting out of passive income, of time leveraged income, whether that's dividend investments, whether that's you know, a portfolio of real estate properties, whether that's some sort of online business, whether that's some even a local brick and mortar business that, you know, doesn't require your direct input. Like if you don't dedicate some of your time to it, the pie chart is never going to change. Like it's always going to be active income. And then you're stuck in that same boat of like not being in control. Like if you stop working, the money dries up. And it's like, you know, if you eventually want to quit, if you eventually want to be financially independent, financially free, you're going to have to replace all that income, or at least enough to cover your expenses with a little more time leveraged variety.
I love what you just said. And the biggest takeaway for me is, and I didn't come into this discussion thinking this way. So you've kind of reframed my understanding of how to just look at the side hustle. Because what I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, is a side hustle isn't necessarily like a passion project or a hobby. What it is it's a framework for finding financial freedom and passive income in your life so that you have financial freedom and you don't have to work until the day you die to support your family, to support yourself, to just kind of continue the life that you want to live.
Yeah. And if that's a goal for you, and I think it's a worthwhile goal. Like if that's not a goal for you, it's like, well, you must really love your job, and that's totally fine. But yes, as long as that aligns with your goals, like, and this is where maybe side hustles differ from, you know, moonlighting or, you know, bartending or delivering pizzas or something. Like, okay, there's this connotation of this entrepreneurial upside, of this time leveraged upside where this could scale beyond just you. This could be the thing that replaces the day job. This could be the thing that is the rat race escape plan in a lot of ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Nick, I got three final questions that I ask at the end of every single podcast. But if anyone's really interested in really starting their side hustle, growing their side hustle, scaling it, getting to this time leveraged financial freedom that you're talking about. How can they find you?
Would love to have you tune into the Side Hustle Show in your favorite podcast app. SideHustleNation.com is the home base. If you hit SideHustleNation.com/ideas, this is my constantly updated laundry list of different part-time business ideas. No opt-in required over there. Hopefully that gets the creative juices flowing.
Awesome. And all those links will be in the show notes. So final three questions of the podcast. What is the most impactful book you have ever read?
Most impactful book. I mean, probably everybody says like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, right?
Oh, there's a couple, yeah.
I'll throw out a favorite of mine recently. It's called Undaunted Courage. And I forget the author, but this is the pretty much the day-by-day account of the Lewis and Clark adventure, which it left me with this like profound gratitude for everything that modern life that I take for granted. Like, you know, where these guys were horribly malnourished. This was like, let's go backpacking, but like, let's do it in territory where the maps we have are pretty sketchy and then they end. And then we have to like draw the map as we go. And if we want food, we get better hope. Like we find an elk. It was like, whereas we got Costco right around the corner, like life is really easy compared to what these guys went through. And like the medicine that they had, it was a miracle. Like more people didn't die. Very cool adventure story. And just kind of left me with like, okay, you know, life could be worse. We're very grateful for the forefathers that came before us in some ways.
You know, what's really cool about that too, is I think this dovetails so well into what you talk about, because at a level like undaunted courage and the Lewis and Clark adventure, it's exactly what the side hustle is, right? Like you don't know where you're going in a lot of ways. You're going on an adventure that ultimately is going to bring you to like the end of the country for them, but to maybe this final frontier for your career, for your life. So I think there's probably a lot of metaphors within that journey of Lewis and Clark that a lot of entrepreneurs probably are going through as well. Would you agree with that or no?
Yeah, it's a fun one.
Yeah. So if you could have a drink with anybody, past or present, who would it be? What would you drink and why?
I'm awful at these. Like I just, you know, would love just to hang out with my wife a little bit more than we do, I guess, one-on-one time. It's something that date nights have gone by the wayside for the last year and a half, but we're looking forward to getting back into that. Drink-wise, I normally would be a beer guy, but I found lately like the IPAs aren't agreeing with me anymore. As delicious as they are, it's kind of frustrating. So yeah, just probably like a sparkling water at this point. Pretty boring.
Beautiful. I love that it was your wife. You know, you get a lot of different answers to that question. And
I'm kind of nervous, like talking like, oh, I want to sit down with Oprah or Bill Gates. It's like, I feel like I would just be nervous and like, that wouldn't be a lot of fun.
400 plus episodes of a podcast. You've had so many conversations with people at this point, but also maybe that's why. And that's a testament to like, you marry the right person, right? If like, you're still at this point saying, if I could have a drink with anyone, like, yeah, I want someone to watch the kids and I want to sit down and I want to maybe not even have a drink. Like maybe just take a nap.
Like maybe just chill for a minute.
My wife, yeah. I just go to bed at 7 o'clock at night. Oh, so the Every Breath Counts podcast is all about finding strategies to optimize your life, to optimize your mind, your body, your career, just your overall life performance. So what advice do you have for the listener today to optimize their life and make every breath count?
I mean, biggest life hack for me has been early morning workouts. Like I tend to do kind of a HIIT style 15, 20 minutes, you know, normally body weight, but sometimes some bands, kettlebells. Like I find this is the lead domino for the day. If I get that in, like I know I'm going to be energized and feel better about the rest of the day versus the days where I just, you know, roll over, like I'll do it tomorrow. Like I kind of sleep in, like that sets the tone for the whole day. And so it's something that has been really important to me for the last 3-4 years.
I couldn't agree more. I think winning the morning is the first step in winning the day. And I think that you probably will find that a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of successful people feel the same way about it. So, Nick Loper, thank you so much for joining the podcast. I really appreciate your time. Thanks for all the advice. Guys, go out, take a listen to Side Hustle Nation. Check them out online. Make your side hustle happen. Optimize your life and make every breath.